capacity, you know, the feeling, you know, try to get in and talk to these students. You know, you can't support, you can't keep 800 military bases around the world open if there aren't students and young people filling those positions. You can't slaughter hundreds of thousands of people around the world if there aren't young people squeezing the trigger. So, you know, sharing the information you learned in this panel, in this discussion, all great things you can do. You know, get in front of young people, all great things you can do.
We're out of time. I'd like to thank all of the speakers featured in today's show. I'd like to thank World Beyond War for allowing us to share their audio with you. And I'd also like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, Romero Funes, our assistant producer, and today's audio engineer. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. And I know it is the holiday season. For those of you who are marking the Christmas holiday, all the very best to you. We hope, though, that you do remember to stay well and stay safe. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Vesta.
Did you know that 80% of KBOO's funding comes from individual supporters? Show your support by donating to KBOO on Give Guide today at www.kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our end of the year fundraising goal. That's www.kboo.fm/give. And thanks for supporting volunteer-powered, community-focused radio.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people without health insurance or a regular health care provider, people with pre-existing conditions like asthma, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease, and people 65 and older are encouraged to get a flu shot. Multnomah County Health Department and Portland Community College are hosting a free weekly drive-through flu vaccine and COVID-19 testing clinic that will be held every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. until March 31, 2021, at PCC's Cascade Campus Parking Lot 1, located at 701 North Jessup Street in Portland. Entrance is on North Albina Street. You can drive through, bike through, or walk up to. To reserve an appointment for a flu shot or COVID test, call 503-988-8939. That's 503-988-8939. This campaign is a project of the Racial and Ethnic Approaches to Community Health and the Communicable Disease Services programs. It is made possible with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Public Service Announcements. زيدي وناس صوت جراس عم بترن بعيد ليلة عيد ليلة عيد الليلة ليلة عيد صوت ولادة ثياب جداد وبكرة الحب جديد ليلة عيد ليلة عيد الليلة ليلة عيد زيدي وناس صوت جراس عم بترن بعيد ليلة عيد ليلة عيد الليلة ليلة عيد صوت ولاد يا بجداد وبكره الحب جديد عم يتلاقوا الاصحاب الهدية خلف الباب في شجرة بالدار ويدوروا ناد صغار والشجرة صارت عيد والعيد سوارة بايد والايد تعلق على الشجرة غنية وعلى ايد ليلة عيد ليلة عيد الليلة ليلة عيد زيني وناس صوت جراس عم بترن بعيد ليلة عيد ليلة عيد الليلة ليلة عيد صوت ولاد يا بجداد وبكرة الحب جديد ليلة عيد ليلة عيد الليلة ليلة عيد
Синюю лес, солнце жива, сам вечерин не тай. Лей не тай, лей не тай, лей не, лей не тай. Солту лет, я бишь беду, букра льхов бежди.
Я мгара келла бьют, تلمع مثل الياقوت كيف جبتي عالدار تلج شرايط وقمار ومين اللي جاي بعيد وعم بيرش مواعيد يدق ابواب الناس ويمشي والخير علينا يزيد
ليلة عيد ليلة عيد الليلة ليلة عيد زيني وناس صوت جراس عم بترن بعيد
ليلة عيد ليلة عيد الليلة صوت ولادة يا بجداد وبكرة الحب
Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to Arab Voices on Houston's Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM, with live streaming, podcasting, and online archive of previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different states in the U.S. Before we begin the program today, just a quick reminder that KPFT continues its December Quiet Fund Drive as the year 2020 is coming to an end, a year that has already proven to be an eventful year. Please support this radio station, KPFT, that you have been able to depend on to stay up to date, from local, national, and international news about the COVID-19 to the Black Lives Matter protests to the disastrous U.S. foreign policy and interventions in the Middle East, and much more. And while it's free to tune, stream, or read this news, it takes real financial resources to make it a reality. And your support is truly critical. Become a member or renew your pledge of support today. Please make a tax-deductible contribution by calling 713-526-5738 or do it online at kpft.org. We greatly appreciate your support, and many thanks to Diane and Brian for their recent contributions. Thank you very much. Millions of Christians around the world are celebrating Christmas this week, and on this occasion, Arab Voices wishes everyone who celebrates Christmas a very Merry Christmas, and we wish everyone else a happy and peaceful holiday season. We hope and pray that peace will prevail on earth by next Christmas. Today on Arab Voices, we will air an interview I conducted previously with the Reverend Dr. Mitri Rahib, President of Dar el Kalima University of Arts and Culture in Bethlehem, Palestine, and co-founder of Bright Stars of Bethlehem, where we talked about the Palestinian city of Bethlehem, where Jesus was born, Palestinian Christians, life under Israeli occupation, and much more. We will also listen to a talk he gave on 7 things you never knew about Palestine and Palestinian Christians, as well as his new 2020 Christmas message. After that, we will air some powerful remarks by the Reverend Erica Williams, speaking for Black Christians for Palestine, describing what she witnessed while traveling from occupied Bethlehem to occupied East Jerusalem in Palestine, and a whole lot more. You don't want to miss that. The Reverend Dr. Mitri Rahib, President of Dar el Kalima University of Arts and Culture in Bethlehem, Palestine, and co-founder of Bright Stars of Bethlehem, whom I've met in Houston a couple of years ago and interviewed him on Arab Voices, spoke at the Greenbelt Festival a few years ago in the UK. His talk was about 7 things you never knew about Palestine and Palestinian Christians. So let's start with that.
So good afternoon, and great to be with you. And thank you for arranging a real UK weather for me. The topic I was given is seven things that you never knew about Palestine and the Palestinians. So, seven things. The first thing is that many people don't know that there are Christians in Palestine. Often when they hear that there are Christians, the first question they ask us is, tell us, when did you convert to Christianity? Assuming that maybe we used to be heathens who were converted to Christianity by some British missionaries or something. And I always like to tell them, remember, Christianity did not start in Canterbury. Sometimes you might have that feeling, but it started in Palestine. And so the normal place to have Christians is Palestine. And the second thing is that the Palestinian Christian community are not a recent community. They have been there for the last 2,000 years. In fact, most probably we are the descendant of the first Christian community who believed in Jesus as their Messiah. So I was born across the street from where Jesus was born. I mean, literally across the street. And so I always like to think that most probably one of my grandmas used to babysit for Jesus. So the Palestinian Christian community is really an old community, and it survived all different political structures and difficult political upheavals, and they continue to be there in Palestine. The third thing maybe you never knew about is that although Christians in Palestine make less than 2% of the population, they play a much bigger role than their percentage. In a study we did recently, we found out that Christians in Palestine run one-third of the health services in the West Bank. Imagine, 2% run one-third of the health services. Also, what we found out in that study is that 45% of all non-governmental organizations, these are human rights organizations, social institutions, etc., are run by Christians or funded by churches. Imagine, 2%, they run 45% of non-governmental organizations. I'm sure you never knew about that. Maybe also you never knew that in Palestine, since we are having a Palestinian government since 95, in average, we had two Christian ministers in the Palestinian cabinet out of 20. So that's like 10%. Right now, we have two ministers in the cabinet. Our finance minister is a Christian, and our tourism minister is a Christian. Two very important, actually, positions. And actually, there are many of the Palestinian ambassadors abroad are Christians. Our UK ambassador here is a Christian. He is a Palestinian Armenian Christian. Our ambassador in Germany is a Christian. Our ambassador in Romania is a Christian. Our ambassador in Italy is a Christian. So actually, Christians play a much bigger role than our percentage. On the other side, since the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948, there haven't been one single Christian minister in any Israeli government. Think of that in terms of the image and the perception of people about Palestine. The fourth thing maybe you never knew about Palestine is that Palestine is a tourist destination. In the West Bank, we have over 3,000 archaeological sites. They go back to 3,000 years or 2,000 years or Middle Ages. So 3,000 archaeological sites in Palestine, and actually 2 million tourists came last year to Palestine. The majority of them are Christian pilgrims. But unfortunately, most of the Christian pilgrims, they come to Palestine to run where Jesus walked. And what we are hoping for is for them to come beside all the archaeological sites, besides all the shrines, to meet the living stones, not only the ancient stones. These are the Christians in the country. The next point is that, unfortunately, Palestine has been occupied for most of the time. Remember, the first people to occupy Palestine were the Assyrians, 722. Then we had the Babylonians, 587. Then the Persian came, 538. All of this is BC, okay? Then the Greeks, then the Romans, then the Byzantines, then the Arabs, then the Crusaders, then few others, then the Ottomans, then the British, and then Israel. So actually, Israel, according to the international law, is an occupying force, and this is why we have to put them in this chain of empires, occupiers. They were occupying Palestine. Unfortunately, many people abroad, they connect Israel with the biblical Israel, the state of Israel of today, with the biblical Israel, instead of connecting Israel actually with all of these occupations that occupied our land. Maybe you never put this together this way. You are hearing a lot about Gaza these days, and I'm not sure if you knew that Gaza is only 360 square kilometers altogether. It's the most densely populated area with around 2 million people. And in the war just in the last 5 weeks, we had over 2,100 Palestinians killed, mostly civilians. Over 10,000 homes destroyed. In that sense, the Gaza war this year is our 9/11 experience in terms of destruction. And yet what many people don't know about Gaza is that Gaza used to be the main mission hub in the 4th, 5th, and 6th century. Christianity actually was brought into South Palestine, into the Sinai Peninsula, into East Jordan by missionaries from Gaza. So that rich history of Gaza, unfortunately, it's not very well known. That's my sixth point. My seventh point, I will end with that, is that many people abroad think, I mean, that they are bystanders. They are watching the Middle East, people there killing each other, and they think they are actually bystanders. But fact is, the international community is part of the problem in the Middle East, not part of the solution. Why? Because the international community keeps actually subsidizing the occupation. The occupation cannot continue if the Israeli will pay for it from their own pocket. But unfortunately, the Israeli have rich uncles in many parts of the world, and they keep subsidizing the occupation. So Israel is getting all the hardware for free. That is the F-16, the shells, the Iron Dome, all of these toys for free. And this is why it can continue the occupation. But also what many people don't realize is that often some churches give Israel the software for this hardware to be activated. And what I mean with software is that for many people in the pew, subconsciously or sometimes consciously, they connect the Israel of the Bible with the Israel of today. And this is why they think it's a divine intervention, this occupation, and this is why they don't think it's a human rights violation, what's happening there. This is why actually the Christians of Palestine are asking the world to help us put an end to the Israeli occupation so that actually both Israeli and Palestinians can live in peace. As I said this morning in my talk, so that the lamb, which is a code for the people of Palestine, and the lion, it's a code for the empire, can live side by side on one condition, that the lion become vegetarian. Otherwise, they cannot live by side by side, which means that the empire learns not to do harm to the others and that they will not put their trust in military means only, but invest in peace. So those are 7 points. Maybe you never knew about Palestine. Hopefully they will help you see Palestine in a new light. Thank you.
That was the Reverend Dr. Mitri Raheb, president of Dar El Kelima University of Arts and Culture in Bethlehem, Palestine, and co-founder of Bright Stars of Bethlehem. As I mentioned earlier, I met the Reverend Dr. Raheb in Houston in 2018 and also interviewed him on Arab Voices, where he talked about the Palestinian city of Bethlehem, where Jesus was born. We talked about Palestinian Christians, life under Israeli occupation, and more. Let's listen in to a portion of that interview.
So you just came from Palestine, Dr. Raheb. You were born and raised in Bethlehem. You have lived it. You see it every day. Jerusalem, Bethlehem, two cities amongst many other Palestinian cities under military occupation by the State of Israel. So tell us first about Palestinian Christians in Palestine, and then we'll talk about what life is like under occupation.
Yeah, thank you, Saeed. I mean, first of all, I think, unfortunately, many people maybe in Texas don't even know that there are Palestinian Christians. And often they ask us, tell us, when did you convert to Christianity, as if Christianity was started in Texas, not in Palestine. And I always tell and remind people, remember, Christianity started in Palestine and Jesus was born in Bethlehem, Palestine, not in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And for the last 2,000 years, there has been an active Christian presence in our country. But because Palestine has been going for so many years through rough situations and one occupation after the other, the percentage of Christians actually, unfortunately, dwindled, so that today less than 2% of the population in historic Palestine are Christians. To put it exactly, 1.7% of the population in the West Bank are Christians, around 50,000 Christians, Palestinian Christians. In Israel, they make 1.3% of the population. They are around 120,000 Palestinian Christians inside Israel. And in the Gaza Strip, there are less than 1,000 Christians left, which means we know that within this generation, unfortunately, Christianity will cease to exist in the Gaza Strip. Christians in Palestine, they belong to four different families, so to say. We have around 40% Greek Orthodox around 40% Roman Catholics or Catholics. We have 10% Oriental Orthodox. These are Armenians, Syriac, and Copts, and 10% Protestants. And I'm a Palestinian Protestant, in this case, even a Lutheran pastor. And yet, Christians continue to play a very important role in the Palestinian society. In a study we did 4 years ago, we found out that although Christians make less than 2% of the population, they run one-third of the health services in Palestine. Imagine, Saeed, that, for example, in Jerusalem, there are, in East Jerusalem, there are 5 hospitals operating right now. 4 of them are Christian hospitals, 1 Islamic hospital. And actually, it is sad to see that President Trump, 3 weeks ago, have cut the funding for these 5 hospitals, which is actually harming many people who really, are looking for health services. So Christians are very important pillar in the Palestinian society. What is even more interesting is that we found out in that study that 45% of all non-governmental organizations, these are human rights organizations, social institutions, educational institutions, are either funded or run by Christians. So Christians are small in number, but their impact actually is felt throughout Palestine.
Dr. Raheb, you mentioned that some people here who are tuning in now may not realize, well, we know people all over, and whether they do it or not, but they say it. Oh, when did you convert to Christianity, or how come? Or what do you mean there are Christians in Palestine or even in the Middle East? But also, those who recognize them, they say, oh, they have been leaving Palestine because of the treatment of Muslims to them. Tell us more about that. You live there. Is that a scenario that is real, or are they leaving because of the Israeli atrocities towards everybody there, regardless of whether you are Muslim or Christian, living in Palestine?
It's a very good question. In fact, we did a study, and we published a research just last year on this issue, and the book is available actually on Amazon. It's called Palestinian Christians, Migration, Displacement, and Diaspora. And it's also available on Kindle. We did a poll, a first of its kind poll, where we asked Christians, but also Muslims actually, about this whole issue of immigration. There were actually two main reasons for the Christian immigration, but also for immigrations of Christians and Muslims in general. The first one has to do with Israeli occupation. I mean, it's not easy to live in a context where you cannot move freely. I mean, imagine if I need to go from Bethlehem to Jerusalem, which is only 5 miles, I need a permit. My 2 daughters, maybe they have been maybe only 8 to 10 times in Jerusalem in their lives, and they are, 24, 28 years old. So imagine they have been more in the U.S. than in Jerusalem. But also, I mean, how many homes were demolished in Jerusalem? How many people were put to prison? I mean, all of these policies of the State of Israel, and now the discrimination law. The nation state law that Israel had at the Knesset. So all of these actually are pushing Christians and Muslims out. In fact, in this study, we found out that 28% of those represented in the poll, Christians said they would immigrate if they have a chance, and 24% of the Muslims said they will immigrate if they had a chance. The second reason for immigration is actually the economical reason, especially young people today. You know, we have very well educated young people in Palestine, but unfortunately, because of all these restrictions, the economy cannot actually offer job opportunities for them. Imagine among young people, the unemployment rate is over 40%. So almost every second young person is unemployed in Palestine, but they are very well educated, and so they try to look for employment opportunities abroad. And so the occupation and the economy, and they are somehow interrelated, are the two reasons for the immigrations of Christians, but also actually of Muslims. And believe it or not, young secular Jews are also fed up with the situation. They don't want to be drafted to the military every other year. They are also very well educated, and so many of them, you know, they go to Berlin, to Germany. They work in the IT sector, and they don't want much to do with the state of Israel. So the land is losing actually its best people, and this is why we are saying peace is really important, so that the two people and the people of the three religions can coexist peacefully and can really work together in creating a different reality, that so that all might have life and have it abundantly.
Now, Jerusalem and the city of Jerusalem and the city of Bethlehem, where Jesus Christ was born, they are very important to several religions, to Christianity, to Muslims. Now, tell us more about those two cities and the measures that Christians, Muslims, and others are facing and even visiting religious sites in these cities, because both of these cities, they have some of the most religious and important sites in the world for Christianity and for Muslims.
Right. I mean, you know, if you come today to Bethlehem, you will see that Bethlehem, unfortunately, is surrounded from three sides by a 25-foot high wall from the north, from the west, from the south, making the little town of Bethlehem basically something like a big prison. And the city is surrounded or is strangled by 19 Jewish Israeli settlements that have taken actually all the land around our city, so that our city cannot expand. On the other hand, there is a checkpoint between Bethlehem and Jerusalem, so nobody can go from Bethlehem to Jerusalem without a permit. And so that traditional religious route between Bethlehem and Jerusalem is cut off, basically. Jerusalem has different problem, because East Jerusalem is being transformed more and more into an Israeli context. So you will it's very difficult if you are Palestinian living in East Jerusalem to get a building permit. One of our professors, music professor at our college, he built a four-story house in East Jerusalem, and the Israeli soldiers came one night at 2 a.m., chased him and his family out and destroyed the house. So, I mean, that's the reality, unfortunately, in that city. The Palestinians living in Jerusalem, if they leave Jerusalem, say, to study abroad, they will lose their rights of return. In fact, the Jerusalemites are, the Palestinians in Jerusalem, are not considered as full citizens. They are considered as resident aliens, which means, I mean, you know, their whole family, their whole roots are in that city for centuries. But Israel considers them to be resident aliens, while the Jewish Israeli who immigrate from the U.S., within one day, they are made citizens. So you can see there the discrimination that is happening, which, you know, makes life sometimes unbearable for people there. And maybe you heard that Israel tried maybe 4 months ago to tax the churches.
Mm-hmm.
And they were asking churches to pay per year $215 million in taxes, which means if this will be implemented, all churches will close, and all the the Christian hospitals, the Christian schools, the Christian guest houses in Jerusalem will be deemed doomed to close down.
Dr. Raheb, I want to ask an important question that I'm often asked by friends and others. So we talk about Bethlehem, especially Bethlehem, as the birthplace of Jesus Christ, Bethlehem, a Palestinian city. And they tell me, you would think Christians all over the world, with no exception, they will be flocking to Bethlehem, defending Bethlehem, liberating Bethlehem, speaking volume against the Israeli occupation and atrocities and the apartheid wall you mentioned and so on. But they are not seeing that from some Christians in the world, definitely in the United States. Now, there are some churches and that are for the Palestinian liberation and against what Israel is doing, and they are for BDS and so on. But in general, still, there are so many, well, especially in Texas, as you mentioned earlier. How come that does not jive? You're talking about Bethlehem, Palestinian city. Jesus Christ was born there, but yet Christians are against Palestinians, and they are for what Israel is doing against Bethlehem.
Saeed, I think as an American citizen, you know that the problem here in the U.S. is that most of the people actually, they have no clue what is happening in our country. If you just listen to the normal media in this country, say if you watch TV, it's very seldom that you get to hear about Palestine, and if you hear, you hear only through the Israeli lenses for many reasons. And so unless people are really are very well informed, or know some people, or have visited Palestine themselves, it's very difficult really to understand what's happening, because the media here portrays only the one side of the story, and it doesn't really tell people what is happening there. This is why we continue to tell people, come and see. The best way for people to understand what's happening is by coming, visiting. This is why we have also a guest house. This is why we have a program called Authentic Tourism, so that groups can come and meet with Christians firsthand, visit West Bank villages and cities and refugee camps, come to Bethlehem, see the wall, but also see what the Christians are doing in terms of preaching, teaching, and healing in that context, in spite of everything. I have to say that the numbers of American churches visiting Palestine is growing. That is a very positive sign, but still it's not enough, because these Christian Zionists have a much bigger apparatus, and they bring, just last week there were around 5,000 Christian Zionists marching through the streets of Jerusalem in support of Israel, and it's frightening to see what kind of theology these Christian Zionists actually follow.
And they have a big influence here in the United States, like you mentioned. So the education is important, and that's why the upcoming historic conference on Jerusalem that will talk about life under occupation and so on just like you explained and mentioned earlier, is very critical and important for people to attend it, to really know what's happening from the experts, from the on the subject matter, from people who live it and so on. So we have a couple of minutes left. I wanted to get your feedback on, or what options do the Palestinians have, and whether it doesn't matter, Christians, Muslim, whatever, just Palestinians, they are living under military occupation. Where do you think they can go from here? What options do they have to bring this misery caused by the Israeli occupation to an end?
First of all, Palestinians are very resilient people. We have dealt with so many empires that were occupying our land, and we survived, and we survived by our steadfastness, by staying there, by not immigrating, and by really investing in the next generation. This is why we opened 12 years ago, for example, the first and only university in Palestine that focused on the arts and culture, because we said we want to educate the next generation of creative Palestinian leaders, that we really will be able to tell their story in a creative way, and to will be able to communicate the human face of Palestine. So resilience is important, but secondly, investing in the young generation, especially investing in education, that is very important. It's really important because we live in the shadow of the wall. It's important that we build bridges, and one important bridge is to the people of the U.S. Even if the current administration is hostile to the Palestinian rights and aspiration, the people of the U.S. Are actually not only generous people, but they are people who really believe in the importance of democracy, peace, and justice. And so connecting with the American people, with the grassroots, with the churches, with the congregations, is really important. And this is what we are trying to do through the festival in Houston. And last but not least, we need to organize ourselves in better ways, so as to build networks. For example, right now when I'm here in Canada, it was important to connect with the First Nations of Canada, those people who were put in reservations, because their struggle is connected to our struggle. And there is a worldwide, actually, network of people who suffer like us and who believe in justice. But also there are churches in this country, in the U.S., who really are in support of the Palestinian people, and networking with them is really important.
That was a portion of an interview I conducted with the Reverend Dr. Mitri Raheb, president of Dar el-Kelima University of Arts and Culture in Bethlehem, Palestine, and co-founder of Bright Stars of Bethlehem. Now, let's listen to the Reverend Dr. Raheb's new 2020 Christmas message from Bethlehem, Palestine.
Dear sisters and brothers, greetings from the little town of Bethlehem. In this season, every year, the Christmas story invites us, saying, "Come, let us go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has come to pass." The Arabic translation of this verse says, "Come, let us go to Bethlehem and see the facts on the ground." The Christmas story is inviting us to see the facts on the ground. Bethlehem is a real city with real people. Bethlehem today is a Palestinian city, surrounded from three sides by a 25-foot high wall, where all the land around Bethlehem has been confiscated. The Christmas story is inviting us to see the systemic injustice in this world: occupation, racism, poverty, militarization. And when the shepherds went to Bethlehem, what they saw there was they found Mary, Joseph, and the child in the manger. They found real people who have names, who have faces. So the Christmas story invites us also, as we look at the facts on the ground, not to forget the people, because it's the people who suffer the most under the facts on the ground, under the systemic injustice. Dear sisters and brothers, the Christmas story is inviting us to connect to the people of Palestine, to reach out to the Christian community in Bethlehem, to think of the many people worldwide who suffer under systemic injustice, to the George Floyds of this world. It is there that we find God incarnate. 2,000 years ago, hope was born in Bethlehem. This hope is still shining, defying all forms of injustices, racism, occupation, poverty, and militarization. I would like to invite you to come next year and to visit us here in Bethlehem, to see the facts on the ground, the longest ongoing occupation in modern history, but also to meet our people, to listen to their stories, to the hopes and fears of the last 70 years. Bethlehem was hit hard by the pandemic this year, and our economy was shut down, which really depends on tourism. So your visit will mean a lot to our people. From the little town of Bethlehem, we wish you a Merry Christmas and hope to see you next year in Bethlehem.
That was the 2020 Christmas message from Bethlehem from the Reverend Dr. Mitri Raheb, President of Dar el-Kelima University of Arts and Culture and co-founder of Bright Stars of Bethlehem. Earlier this month, on December 1, 2020, the Reverend Erica Williams, social justice activist with Black Christians for Palestine, delivered a powerful message at a meeting at the United Nations Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People. Let's listen in.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Security General, Mr. President, Excellencies, and to each of you, I would like to extend my deep appreciation to the General Assembly's Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People for inviting civil society to participate in today's solemn commemoration of the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian People. I will never forget Wednesday, July 28, 2018. I was traveling on the public bus from Bethlehem to East Jerusalem, and we came to a checkpoint where all Palestinians had to exit off the bus to be searched before they could enter Israel. Even though the bus went from one Palestinian destination to another, from occupied Bethlehem to occupied East Jerusalem, there was a mother on the bus with two small children, and she was rushed off the bus by an Israeli officer who had a large gun around his chest and pointed it towards her. I could see the fear and terror in the woman's eyes. She was searched and allowed back on the bus, but she held her children tight for the remainder of the ride. I was allowed to stay on the bus because I had an American passport. This experience caused me to have nightmares for weeks. I come to you today in the spirit of the brown-skinned Palestinian Jew, Jesus Christ, who grew up in Nazareth, a town which was poor, marginalized, occupied, and militarized by the Roman Empire. When he started his public ministry, he came with a clear message concerning what he was sent to earth to do. His purpose can be found in the gospel passage of Luke 4 and 18 verses 19. God's spirit is on me. He has chosen me to preach the message of good news to the poor, sent me to announce pardon to prisoners and the recovery of sight to the blind, to set the burdened and battered free, to announce this is God's year to act. We are calling you to act and to do it now. And I want to be very clear that the fight for the liberation of the Palestinians is not only being waged by Christians, but people of all faith traditions, including Jews, Muslims, and more, and all people who hold the belief that all people are born free and deserve dignity. For 43 years, the UN General Assembly and most of its member states have commemorated the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. Palestinians have indeed seen changes in their lives during that time, but those changes have made their lives worse and not better. The apartheid wall in the West Bank was built as the International Day of Solidarity was solemnly proclaimed each year. The International Court of Justice ruled that the wall violated international law and should be removed from Palestinian territory, and yet the wall remains. In 2008, 2012, and 2014, the Israeli military launched wars against the occupied and besieged Gaza Strip, while the International Day of Solidarity remained an annual event, and yet thousands of Palestinians, as well as 15 Israeli civilians, were killed in those wars. Commemorating international solidarity is not enough. It is not enough to cite the words of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights when the obligation of the United Nations and its member states is to uphold and implement and defend those rights. Palestinians are still being denied their rights, and the UN must go beyond words to a new priority of action. And so therefore I come to you today with a heavy heart, not to give a great speech for people to clap and then go back to business as usual, but to remind you, as member states of the United Nations, you, excellencies, hold a grave responsibility. The protection of those languishing under military occupations lies in your hands. The restoration of human rights to those illegally denied such rights is your obligation. The defense of those unable to protect themselves is your burden. And I am sad to report to you today, as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, that you all have written a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. I am from Saginaw, Michigan, which is next door to Flint, Michigan. Many of you have heard of the water crisis in Flint, where a brave Palestinian pediatrician refused to remain silent about the impact on children drinking poisoned water that resulted from a political decision. 6 years after Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha told the world about the Flint water crisis, I still have family members drinking bottled water because the problems from the poisoning of the water have not been solved. The water crisis proved once again that if you are a person of color or poor, your life does not matter to those in power. One of the things that really angered me during my time visiting refugee camps in Palestine was there was no green spaces for children. However, I saw children in Israeli settlements with sparkling swimming pools, parks and schoolyards filled with grass and flowers. Yet many Palestinian children in villages just below those hilltop settlements don't even have enough water to bathe or to drink. It reminded me of the fight that the Poor People's Campaign and so many others have been waging here in the United States against the issues of systemic racism, poverty, militarism, and ecological devastation. The United States government, with all of its power and wealth, continues to allow for more than 140 million people in the country to remain poor or low wealth. Yet Washington continues to spend its $3.8 billion of our tax money every year they send it directly to the Israeli military. Since last year's solemn commemoration of the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people, the world has seen unprecedented transformations and new faces, new dangers. According to the World Health Organization, as of November 2020, a total of 91,464 cases of COVID-19 have been diagnosed in the occupied Palestinian territory, and 767 deaths have been reported. This is compounded by poor public health conditions, water and electricity crisis, rampant poverty, and a high population density. The Palestinian people were living in a pandemic of racism long before COVID-19 hit. On June 23rd, 2020, the Israeli military murdered Ahmed Erekat, a deeply loved 27-year-old brother and fiance. He was shot and killed as he was running errands for his sister on her wedding day. His mother and father simply want to say goodbye to their child and lay their son to rest, but the Israeli government is refusing to return him to his family unless they promise not to bring a legal case against the Israeli soldier who murdered their boy. Israel's practice to withhold the Palestinian dead is in grave violation of international humanitarian law stipulations with the Geneva Convention that upholds the respect for the dead and their burial. 5 days after George Floyd was murdered in the United States, Aid Halek, a 32-year-old severely autistic man, was shot and killed by Israeli border police. Ayed was walking along a path he took to his special school every day when the police yelled at him to stop. He did not understand what they were asking of him, and he continued to walk. The police chased him and began firing shots at him. Ayed was terrified and hid in a garbage room at the school. The police found him and shot him dead. This story is parallel to the stories of the United States of slave patrols, Jim Crow segregation, and mass incarceration. It is parallel to the stories of apartheid in South Africa. The fight against racism, income equality, and domination are global and interconnected. Malcolm X, speaking at a Methodist church in Rochester, New York, in 1965, challenged any narrow view of rights. As long as you call it civil rights, you only have allies can be people in the next community, many of whom are responsible for your grievance. But when you call it human rights, it becomes international. And then you can take your troubles before the world, and anybody anywhere on the earth can become your ally. Our movements today call as well for Palestinians to be free. Too many Palestinians have already died while you all wait to decide which side you will be on. We cannot wait. We will not wait. Palestinian lives matter. And we, the global society, civil society, are organizing and building power together around the world. The UN and almost all of its member states have for decades stated its opposition to Israel's illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. Yet settlements continue to expand, including plans for 1,200 new illegal settlements, housing units, announced in just the last few weeks. The UN and almost all of its member states have for decades rejected Israel's claim to sole control of Jerusalem as its capital. But Palestinians, whose families in Jerusalem go back centuries, continue to be denied the right to live in their own city. So, General Assembly and ambassadors from member states, I ask of you today, how much longer will the Palestinian people die from the knee of the Israeli government on their necks, from racism, income inequality, and domination? How much longer will the Palestinian activists and human rights defenders like Kitam Safin being arrested to silence the movement against the Israeli occupation? How much longer will the United States remain one of the biggest purveyors of violence against the Palestinians? How much longer? How much longer? That is the question I leave with you today. A universal truth reminds us that you reap what you sow. What will you sow on behalf of the Palestinian people? Thank you.
Some powerful remarks there from the Reverend Erica Williams, social justice activist with Black Christians for Palestine, delivered at a meeting earlier this month at the United Nations Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People. You're listening to Arab Voices on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Folks, KPFT is committed to covering emerging stories and delving deeply into the details of what's happening now without fear, hype, or compromise. This vital news coverage is made possible through community support. If you're a member of KPFT, thank you. Your support ensures an informed public, helps sustain this community resource, and help KPFT during this important end-of-year campaign. Become a member or renew your pledge of support. Please make a tax-deductible contribution today by calling 713-526-5738 or do it online at kpft.org. We greatly appreciate your support. Thank you. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
زيها نجوم بيلمع لونا بيلمع مثل الالماس مليان التلج ومليان ملبس ابيض بكياس يا جراس وعي الناس للقداس يا جراس يا جراس الليل عيد وعي الناس كان عليها مسابح زرقا وشمع صغير ولمبة حمرا وصفرة تضوي وتطفي بتشبه ضوي الطرقات بين غصون أشرا يتفضى ورفة نور وبالونات يا جراس وعي الناس للقداس يا جراس يا جراس الليل عيد وعي الناس نفزع انه توقع وتدوب فوقا كرت صغير ملون وبقلبه في مكتوب كل عيد انتو بخير انتو بخير انتو بخير كل عيد وبلدي بخير بلدي بخير كل عيد وبلدي بخير بلدي بخير
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a